The whole consciousness is like an ocean. And your mind is not only yours. Your mind is part of the collective mind. All around you is the ocean of consciousness. Just like fishes in the ocean, you are fishes in the consciousness. In and out, this side and that, above and below, the ocean. And the ocean waves. Who are you to disturb it? And who are you to make it quiet and silent? And how you can do it? So whenever a person becomes too much interested and eager to calm down the mind, he creates many troubles for himself. It is not possible. And when you try some impossibility, you get frustrated. Then you think of thousands and one causes why it is not happening. Simple fact is, it cannot happen. Tantra says, watch it. It is none of your business that thoughts come and go. They come on their own accord. They go on their own accord. Why you get involved into them? Who are you to calm them down? They don't belong to you. They belong to the vast ocean that surrounds you. You were not there, and they were. You will not be one day, and they will remain. Now science accords with this. Every thought is a wave. That's why a radio can broadcast thoughts. They pass through walls and hills and your bodies, and nothing hinders them. Something is broadcasted in New York and you hear it here. Now scientists suspect that the possibility is there, soon we may be able to catch thoughts from the past, because thoughts never die. It may be possible someday to catch Tilopa saying to Naropa, because of you, that which cannot be uttered, but because of your trust, I will say it. It is possible because thoughts never die. This thought of Tilopa must be somewhere near some star, if we can catch it. Science may be capable someday, because when from New York a thought is broadcasted, it takes time to reach Pune. It takes few seconds, but it takes time. It travels. It will go on traveling. It will leave this earth. It will go on traveling. It will reach in few million years to some star. If we can catch it there, you can listen it again. Thoughts are an ocean all around you. They exist without you. You just be a witness. So Tantra says, accept them. The tide comes, it is beautiful. The ebb comes, it is beautiful. Big, strong waves trying to reach to the sky. Tremendous energy. Watch it. Then comes a calm ocean. Everything subsided. And the moon reflects in it. Beautiful. Watch it. And if you can watch, you will become absolutely silent. The thoughts may go on, coming to the beach, scattering on the rocks, you will remain calm and quiet. They will not affect you. So the real problem is not thoughts, but being affected. Don't fight with the thoughts. Simply become a witness and you are not affected. And it is a richer silence, remember. And Tantra is always for richer experiences. There is a possibility of creating a dead silence, a silence that you find on the cemetery. You can force your mind so much that the whole nervous system becomes paralyzed, then there will be no thoughts. Because a very delicate nerve system is needed to receive them. The ocean will be there, but you will not be receptive. Your receptivity will be lost. And that is what is happening to many yogis, so-called yogis. They go on dulling their nervous system. They eat less, so that no energy moves to the brain. In fasting, the energy cannot move to the brain. The body needs it first. They live in such a way that by and by their whole brain system becomes paralyzed, numb, sitting in one posture, monotonous, repeating a mantra, monotonous. If you continuously repeat a mantra for a few years, of course the system becomes dull, because no new sensations enter. The vitality is lost. In fact, this man has not become silent. This man has become more stupid. And you will have the stupid look on many yogis' faces. You will not see the intelligence. You will see something dull, dead. A stone-like thing has happened. They have not attained to silence, they have locked their brain. They have lost their receptivity. They have dulled themselves completely, they are dead. Nothing happens to them inside, because for anything to happen, a very delicate nervous system is needed. Very delicate. Very receptive, sensitive. So this should be the criterion. If you see on the face of a yogi the radiance, the intelligence, awareness, sensitivity, as if something has flowered within, he is fulfilled. Then only silence has happened. Otherwise one can be silent. Stupid people are. Idiots are perfectly silent, because they cannot think. But what type of silence is this? An idiot is not a yogi. An idiot is simply born in such a way that his brain system is not functioning. You can do it with your own brain system. By fasting, by yoga postures, you can stand on your head for hours, that will do. Sirsasana is perfect. You stand on your head for hours, that will make your nervous system dead, because your brain exists. If very, very minute energy and blood reaches to it, because the nerves are so delicate, so small, fragile, You cannot conceive, because with bare eyes they cannot be seen. Your hair seems to be very thin. It is nothing. A nerve in the brain is just like the hair. If you put 10,000 nerves one on top of another, then they will be of the thickness of the hair. So if blood goes fast, it simply destroys them. It is like a flood. Man attained to this brain, and no animal has attained, because man stood on the feet. That's why the blood cannot go to the head. It is against the gravitation. The gravitation goes on pulling the blood downwards. And very, very minute part of the blood reaches to the head. That's why that subtle system can exist. Animals cannot have it, because they move on their four, and their brain remains on the same level as their body. If you stand on your head, you do sirsasana. For a single minute, it may be good. Or even for a single second, it may be good. Because it just gives a bath. And just the blood reaches, and by the time it reaches, you are back to your normal posture. It cleanses. But if you do sirsasana for minutes together or hours together, it will kill your whole brain system. The flood is too much. The brain cannot exist. And yogis have found many ways how to destroy the brain. Once it is destroyed, you cannot see the ocean. But the ocean is there. Thoughts are there. It is just like your radio has gone out of order. Don't think that brass casts are not passing from this room. They are passing. But your receiving mechanism is not functioning. Start the radio, put it on, immediately start sketching. Brain is just like a receiving center. If you destroy it, you will be silent. But that silence is not of the tantra. And I don't teach that silence. That is death. It is good in the symmetry. You are not going anywhere through it. You are wasting your life. And a very subtle instrument which can make you perfectly intelligent. An instrument which can become so perceptive that you can enjoy the whole celebration of existence you have desired. More sensitivity is needed. More poetry is needed. More life, more beauty. Everything more is needed. What you will do then? Attend to tantra silence. Watch the waves. And the more you watch, the more you will be able to see the beauty of them. The more you watch, the more subtle nuances of thought will be revealed to you. And it is beautiful. But you remain the witness. You remain on the beach. You just sit on the beach. I lie down in the sun and just let the ocean do its own work. You don't interfere. If you don't interfere, by and by, the ocean doesn't affect you. It goes on roaring all around, but it doesn't penetrate you. It is beautiful in itself, but it is separate. A distance exists. That distance is real meditation, the real silence. The world goes on and on. You are not affected. You remain in the world. But you are not in the world. You remain in the world, but the world is not in you. You pass through the world, untouched, unscarred. You remain virgin. Whatsoever you do, Whatsoever happens to you makes no difference. Your virginity remains perfect. Your innocence remains absolute. Your purity is not destroyed. He who keeps tantric precepts yet discriminates, betrays the spirit of Samay. And says Tilopa, that if you are trying to keep the tantra path, the tantra precepts, then remember, don't discriminate. If you discriminate, you may be a tantra philosopher, but not a tantra follower. Don't discriminate. Don't say this is good and that is bad. Drop all discrimination. Accept everything as it is. Cease all activity. Abandon all desires. Rest in yourself. Come back to home. Let thoughts rise and fall as they will, like ocean waves. He who never harms the non-abiding, nor the principle of non-distinction, upholds the tantric precepts. One who never harms the principle of non-distinction, who never discriminates, he follows the right path. And who never harms the non-abiding, this is one of the most beautiful tantra things. Tantra says, remain homeless. Don't abide anywhere. Don't get identified and don't cling to anything. Remain homeless. Because in homelessness you will attain to your real home. If you start getting abiding in this and that, you will miss the home. Don't cling to anybody, to anything, to any relationship. Enjoy, but don't cling. Enjoyment is not a problem. Once you start clinging, once the clinging mind comes in, then you are not flowing. Then a block has come in. Don't abide anywhere. Then you will abide in yourself. Don't cling to anything. Only then you will be able to rest in yourself. So two principles are very basic. Don't harm the principle of non-abiding and don't harm the principle of non-distinction. He who abandons craving and clings not to this and that perceives the real meaning given in the scriptures. Through scriptures you cannot attain to truth, but if you attain to truth, you will understand the scriptures. Scriptures are nothing but witnesses, the bare witness. You cannot learn the truth from them, but once you know the truth, they will bear witness. All the scriptures of the world will say, yes, you have attained. This is what truth is. Scriptures come from persons who have attained. Whatsoever their language and symbology, whatsoever their metaphor. Once you attain, you penetrate through all metaphors, symbology, all languages. People ask me that what you are doing here. Sometimes you talk on tantra and tilopa, and sometimes you talk on yoga and Patanjali. And sometimes you talk on Lao Tse and Chuang Tse, the Taoist and the Tao. And sometimes you jump to Heraclitus and Jesus. What are you doing here? I am talking the same thing. I am not talking anything else. Heraclitus or Tilopa or Buddha or Jesus makes no difference to me. I am talking myself. They are just excuses. Because once you attain, you fulfill all scriptures of the world. then there is no Hindu scripture, Jewish scripture, Christian scripture. Then suddenly you become the culmination of all the scriptures. I am a Christian, a Hindu, a Jew, a Mohammedan, because I am no one. And the truth, once known, is beyond all scriptures. All scriptures indicate towards it. These scriptures are nothing but fingers pointing to the moon. Fingers may be millions, but the moon is the same. Once you know, you have known all. Through scriptures, you will become sectarians. You will be a Christian because you cling to the Bible. You will be a Mohammedan if you cling to the Quran. You will be a Hindu if you cling to the Gita. But you will not be religious. Religiousness happens only when the truth has happened to you. Then you don't cling to anything, and all the scriptures start clinging to you. Then you don't follow anybody, and all the scriptures follow you. They become like your shadows. And all the scriptures are the same because they say about the same. Their metaphors, of course, are different. Their languages are different. But the experience is the same. Says Buddha, you taste the ocean from anywhere, you will always find it salty. You taste it from the Quran, or from the Bible, or from the Torah, or the Talmud, the taste is always the same. Scriptures cannot lead you. In fact, they are dead without you. When you achieve the truth, life suddenly comes to all the scriptures. Through you they become again alive. Through you they are reborn. That is what I am doing, giving rebirth to Tilopa. He has been dead for many hundred years. Nobody has talked about him. Nobody has given again a birth. I am giving him a rebirth. While I am here, he will be again alive. You can meet him if you are capable. He is again near here. If you are receptive, you can feel his footsteps. He is again materialized. Through me, I will give birth to all the scriptures. Through me, they can again come to this world. I can become an anchor. That's what I am doing. And that's what I would like you to do in your own life someday. When you realize, when you come to know, then bring all that is beautiful in the past back and give it a rebirth. Renew it so that all those who have known can be again on the earth and travel here and help people. The second question, what is tantric sex after monkey sex and after love bliss sex? Before the highest cosmic and religious sex, in which no partner is needed, in which the cosmos is the partner, is not there tantric sex in which two partners are involved, a sex act which is a meditation
based on certain techniques. It is good that after meditating on death, you will be meditating on Tantra and Tantra sex. Because sex is also a small death. And because of that small death in sex, there is so much release of joy in you. For a single moment, you disappear. And that moment is the climax, the orgasm. In that single moment, you don't know who you are. In that single moment, you are pure energy vibrating, pulsating, with no center to it, with no ego in it. In that single moment of orgasmic space, you lose all boundaries, separation. You become vast, huge. You are no more separate from the other. That's why there is so much joy, although the moment is very small. And once it is gone, you feel very frustrated. Because it has been so sad. It was so fleeting. And you start hankering again. And each time that moment comes, you reach to a pinnacle. And then you fall into a deep darkness, into the abyss. So sex brings you joy, and sex brings you great misery too. It takes you to sunlit peaks, and then drops you into the darkest valleys. After each sex act, one feels frustrated. Something was happening, and it happened, and you could not catch even hold of it, and it was gone. So sex remains the greatest fascination and the greatest frustration. Because of these two things in the act of sex, there are two types of people. Those who become too much fascinated with the fascination, addicted with sex, they are the people who go on indulging in all kinds of sexualities. And their whole life is nothing but search for more sex, better sex. And the other who become addicted with the frustration of sex, they renounce the world, the woman, the man. They escape to the Himalayas or in the monasteries. But both have reacted to sex. Your worldly and your otherworldly, they are not different. They both are sexual. They have chosen one part of the sex act. They have chosen opposite parts. But they have chosen out of the sex act. That's why your so-called religions are so much against sex. They have chosen the frustration part. The indulgent and the renunciate are two aspects of the same coin. They are not different people. They are the same people. And both have chosen out of sex. Tantra is a totally different attitude. It says there is joy in sex and there is frustration in sex. Because the moment of orgasm is very small. That moment can become very deep. That moment can remain there for hours. That moment, once you know the art of remaining in it, can surround you 24 hours. Tantra transforms sex. Tantra is the true religion. It does not choose between the fascination and the frustration. It transcends both. It uses sex as a key, and it is a key, because all life comes through it, all flowers bloom through it, and all birds sing through it. All that you see around you, the green and the red and the gold, all comes through sex and is sex energy. All the poetry and all the songs and all the music is rooted in sex energy. All art, all creativity is nothing but expressions of sex. So tantra sex has to be understood. Few things. The tantric definition of sexuality is opposite to the modern definition. The modern mind regards sex as a need, like hunger for food, which incidentally provides sense and ego gratification. That's how Freud thinks about sex, that it gives you ego gratification, satisfaction, relaxation. It relieves tensions. It is a need. The Tantra regards sex as a powerful, instinctual return to our ultimate reality, one of the highest forms of meditation. There you have to understand the first thing to remember. Freud does not understand sex ultimate depth. Freud has only looked into the repressed sexuality of man. What Christianity has done in the West, the wrong, Freud was trying to put it right. But Christianity remains superficial, and Freud remains superficial. Why? Because the cure cannot go deeper than the disease. The disease was superficial. The cure cannot be deeper than that. Tantra does not define sex as a need. It is not. A man can live without sex. It is not a need. Not like food. You cannot survive without food. It is not like thirst. You cannot survive without water. But you can survive easily without sex. Maybe you can survive longer. Sex is not a need like food, or thirst, or hunger. Sex has a differently total dimension, a different dimension altogether. It is a way to contact the ultimate reality. It is an urge to move to the original source. In ordinary sex, it happens only for moments. Even that is rare, because there are very few orgasmic persons left in the world. People have become so much civilized that to be orgasmic seems impossible. A civilized person cannot be orgasmic, because he cannot allow himself to be wild. Only a wild person can be orgasmic. Because orgasm is wild. The better you are civilized, the better you are cultured, sophisticated, educated, the less is the possibility for you to be orgasmic. Then sex is just a relief. It is like sneezing. Nothing much. It is sheer wastage. You accumulate energy. and you don't know what to do with your energy. And the energy becomes heavy on you. It has to be thrown out in some way or other. So you go on throwing the energy. But you have lost the language of orgasm. What is the language of orgasm? If you are really orgasmic, you will groan and moan and shout and sing and pray. And thousand and one things will happen when you are making love to your woman or to your man. It is going to be a mad thing. And that is difficult in a civilized world. The whole neighborhood will know that now you are making love. And the people will start phoning the police station that there is danger, one person is gone orgasmic. Yes, you will dance, you will sing, you will utter incoherent sounds, gibberish will come. One never knows what will happen, because you lose control. To be orgasmic means capacity to lose control. The constant control is there. You are simply sitting on your energies, controlling them. This should be, this should not be, this is right, that is wrong. You are continuously doing that, inhibiting, repressing. Only go so far, beyond that is danger. Only this much is allowed. How can you be orgasmic? And if you are not orgasmic in other things, you cannot be orgasmic in sex. If in your anger you control, then you cannot be orgasmic in sex. If you can be orgasmic in anger, only then you can be orgasmic in sex. Man is a totality. If you cannot get into a rage, how can you get into love? Impossible. Have you watched it? Knowingly, unknowingly, couples stumble upon the fact that if they want to make love, it is a must that they should fight before they make love. So each evening couples fight, become angry. That becomes a little help. A pillow fight is helpful. Your energies start moving. Your juice starts flowing. And you, if you can be a little silly and stupid in anger, then you can be silly and stupid in love too. Then who cares? A natural man is orgasmic in us. Somebody has asked the question that if people become authentic as you say they should become authentic and natural, and if they don't smile because the smile is phony, and if they go on screaming and shouting in the streets, what will happen to the world? Many things will happen to the world. First, wars will become impossible. There will be no Vietnams and no Israels. Because people will never accumulate that much anger in them that they have to kill and kill millions. Many things will happen to the world if people are natural. Then they will not shout so much as you think they will shout. Right now, if they are allowed to shout, they will shout. But how long? If they are given complete freedom, shouts and abusing and condemnation and fights will start disappearing from the world. It is a vicious circle. It is as if you have been starving a person and you don't allow him to go close to the freeze. And you say, if we allow him, he will eat too much. And you have been starving him. And now you are afraid if you allow him any freedom, he will eat too much, he will fall ill. So you don't allow him to come to the freeze. he has to live by his quota. Whatsoever you give, he has to live. Now he fantasizes, he dreams what to do, how to reach to the freeze, how to eat more. His whole imagination becomes focused on food. He dreams of food. A famous Sufi story says, three persons were traveling. They purchased a Sufi sweet halwa, but they had not enough money, and the halwa was very costly. It was not enough for three. So there was great debate who should eat it. They decided that we should do one thing. We all should sleep, and in the morning, whosoever has dreamt the best dream, he will be the person to eat it all. Agreed, they fell asleep. Early morning, they related their dreams. One said, he was a Christian. He said, I dreamt of Jesus. And Jesus said, come to heaven. I have prepared the place for you. And he was calling me, inviting me. It was such a beautiful dream. I have never dreamt such a thing. And Jesus was so radiant. And I feel so good that I have been accepted by Jesus. The second was a Hindu. He said, this is nothing. I dreamt I have become Krishna. And thousands of gopis dancing around me, beautiful damsels, and I am playing on the flute. It was such a beautiful dream. And the third was a Mohammedan Sufi, and they asked, what about you? He said, Muhammad appeared and said, you fool, what are you doing here? Go and eat the halwa. So I have eaten it. Because how can you reject when Muhammad commands? If you are hungry, if you are kept starving, then the fear arises that if you are left loose in the streets, you may enter into a restaurant, kill the owner, or do something. But if you are well fed, then nobody does anything like that. This is what has happened for thousands of years. You have been repressed. You have been made more and more phony. Now the fear arises. The questioner is right. The fear arises if people become authentic and start screaming and shouting and doing things the way they always wanted to do and were never allowed to do. The world will go mad. Yes, for a few years the world will go mad, but that madness will be therapeutic. It will help immensely. After that, nobody will go mad ever. Neurosis will disappear, psychosis will disappear, wars will disappear, politicians will become meaningless. Nations and the militaries and the armies will become irrelevant. They will not be needed. That's why the politician and the priest are so much in favor of repressing people, because they depend on these repressions. Wars will not be there. Generals won't like it. Army people won't like it. If there is no Vietnam, then their whole purpose is lost. If there are no nations, then what is the point of having prime ministers and presidents? They are irrelevant. Government becomes irrelevant if people are natural. Less and less government will be needed.